A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose? I don't lose. I win. I win. I'm a lawyer. That's my job. That's what I do.
Hey, everybody. This is Alex Barnett from the Comedians at Law. We're bringing you episode 38 of the podcast, and I am pleased and very excited to be joined today by Julie Katakis, who is taking her first spin in the co-host chair. Julie, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Excellent. I think you're up to the task.
You've already shown. I practiced that all day.
Good. You've shown tremendous acumen so far.
Thank you for
co-hosting. So Julie is joining me today to bring you episode 38. We've got some great and exciting stories, news stories to bring you. But before we get there, we've got a couple of things to introduce everybody to. Number one, for those of the uninitiated or the fans who've only been following us on the podcast, but perhaps not elsewhere, Julie is quite the online content creator and has been doing a bunch of videos for us. Is that correct, Julie?
Yes, really, really amazing.
That I would say exciting stuff.
Amazing, I think.
You're sort of the, what's the name of the woman who directs Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, but I'm sort of like her.
That's right. I was setting you up for that. That's right. I'm suggesting that you're the James Cameron's ex-wife of,
that's her name.
Of Comedians at Law, and you are doing that level of cinematic material for us.
Yeah.
So for those of you who haven't checked it out, please do go to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/comediansatlaw, and you'll see videos that Julie has been preparing and uploading, weekly, and they're very funny, very, very funny. And, particularly Julie's mom thinks so.
And, she does. Yeah. She's a good critic of these videos. She calls me a method actor.
Oh, that's good. What about your daughter? Does she enjoy the videos?
She enjoys watching them. She actually does. She does watch them, and she knows it's me, and she is mesmerized and impressed every time.
That's great.
I think she even said once, like, I want to be just like you when I grow up, Mommy. That's what she said. I swear.
You can't do better than that. That's great. So if you haven't checked out the videos, please do check that out. The other thing that everybody should know is, and we've talked about this on prior episodes, but it's getting closer and closer, so it's even more important now. June 21st at 8 p.m., we're doing our show at Gotham Comedy Club, which is in New York at 208 West 23rd Street. It's to benefit the Gotham Comedy Foundation, which is a really good cause. It provides, quote-unquote, humor therapy to people in hospices and hospitals. Julie, you'll be at that show, correct?
Yes, I will be at that show.
Yeah, and the last show we did at Gotham was really fun. It was a great time, and all the more better this time because we'll be donating the proceeds of going to the foundation. So that's very exciting. So if people want tickets, they can get them online at the Gotham Comedy Club website, or they can come to us for more information. They can email us at info@comediansatlaw.com or visit us on Twitter at Comedians at Law, or on Facebook, also Comedians at Law. Anything else you're doing in the next week or so, Julie, you want to promote right now? This is your chance.
Okay. No.
All right. That's really good. I mean, clearly you were prepared for that. So that's...
Yeah.
So what are you going to cook for dinner tomorrow? Maybe you want to tell people about that.
Excellent. I don't do a lot of that.
Little peanut butter and jelly. Very good.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the news. We've got some good news stories this week.
But since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
All right, Julie, we've got some really excellent news stories. I know you've been gearing up for this, and I'm going to get right into it and set them up for you because I know you want to knock them down like they're bowling pins. Mm. The first story is the one that's on everybody's mouths and lips and minds this week, which is this surveillance of people's phone calls, both internationally and domestically. As people know, under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance court order, Verizon Business Services has been providing the NSA on a daily basis with information about calls between the U.S. and overseas and between domestic phone centers. And after all the furor that happened when the news was leaked about this, President Obama came out today and said, well, don't worry, your phone calls are not – no one's listening to your phone calls. And I want to ask you is whether you believe him or not.
No. And I kind of hope maybe they listened to a few of mine. And if so, like, could I get some feedback? Did they think a couple jokes were funny? That's how I, like, test stuff out. This is what I've been doing.
Is that right? So you call your friends and you're like, listen, what do you think of this? A mother and a chicken walk into a bar.
Yes. Were you listening to my conversation? Because I swear that's the setup for one of my jokes.
Well, I was half expecting Obama at this speech to say, look, no one's listening to your calls. However, I do want to say to Andrew Goldstein that he should call his mother. She's worried about him. Right? I mean, it's not feasible that they don't listen in on the calls. Now, the other part of it is like, from a serious matter, the government is completely overwhelmed and underfunded. How is it possible that somehow with all that, they're still managing to listen to every phone call made across the globe?
Right, and they pick Verizon. Why not T-Mobile?
Well, I think we both know the answer to that is because T-Mobile has lousy service.
Yeah, but it's cheaper. And it's cheap. They should have gone with Metro PCS. That's what I think as a citizen. It would have saved a lot of money.
Well, what do you think? Like, listen, do you watch Breaking Bad, for example? Or The Wire?
I really hate to say this. The Wire, yes. Okay. I watched the whole thing. I haven't watched Breaking Bad yet.
So you watch The Wire, and because of your prior incarnation as a drug mule, you're familiar with the concept of a burner phone.
I am, yeah. Too familiar.
Right. I know this because you told me about this off air, that you used to use burner phones frequently. And, and then wait, before we get into it, like, how do you dispose of a burner phone?
I usually just throw it behind a dumpster that in an alley that I often frequent.
Okay. See, once or twice I had to use a burner for reasons I don't want to go into. I would do like in the Bourne movies. I would break the phone in my hands, destroy it, twist it up until it was in its component parts, and then throw it into a body of water.
See, that's probably – yeah, I got caught a lot. So mine – I yelled. There was a lot of yelling and running. I kind of thought distance will do it, but apparently, I didn't break it, the phone. I didn't break it.
Well, there you
that's
go.
That's the key.
And hence your legal troubles that ensued.
Yes, I don't want to talk about it.
Well, anyway, my question to you was, are they recording, like, burner phone calls? Like, that would seem like the phone calls you want to record. Like, who cares what I am saying to my wife? What I say to my wife is, like, who's picking up the baby and did you buy toilet paper? Like, why do they care about that? Don't they want to know what these guys are talking about with drug cartels and possible terrorist influence with that?
That's what makes – I mean, I think they're, you know, they're just trying to figure out who's calling overseas and what overseas places are of interest. But that's such a broad, very, very broad, target that they're using here. I kind of think it's interesting, actually.
Do you call overseas?
Sometimes to Greece, actually. I have family there.
You have family in Greece?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, what do they say about the economy?
They really don't like to talk about it. When we say, oh, this is a great time for us to visit, they're like, don't come here. We have no money or food for you, so please go stay away. It's really awful. It's sad.
I would have bet. I mean, I don't want to trivialize it, but I would imagine that for Greek people, talking about the economy is sort of like for New York sports fans talking about the Mets.
I shouldn't laugh.
Right. You shouldn't, but it's funny. I mean, like,
it is.
Is the unemployment rate?
Good. It was a good one.
Is the unemployment rate in Greece about 100% now?
Well, I mean, it's high. I don't think it's quite to that extent, but yeah, it's really high. I mean, there's people that are talking about they're homeless. They don't eat now. It's ridiculous. It's kind of it's a little jarring.
It is jarring, and I don't want to trivialize it. So, do you think that, given the fact that it's a dire economic circumstance, the NSA is recording your calls to your relatives in Greece to talk about?
Part of me hopes so. Right, I want to think that I'm that interesting.
Well, also maybe then the government would actually do something about what's going on in Greece, something important, rather than like trying to break up a tryst between some guy like, let's say, for example, Congressman Mark Sanford and his overseas paramour. Right, because this is what.
But that's great stuff because it distracts from other things that are going on. They need that stuff.
I know.
It's important.
Right. Let's go back to the underpinnings. I mean, we are comedians of law, so we should have some legal analysis here. I mean, is this constitutional? You're a constitutional law scholar. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, okay. So I did some constitutional law, and specifically with, you know, like national security. And the unfortunate thing for we, the citizens, is it's so hard to kind of dispute any decisions made when it's national security. It's such a broad, really all the definitions, anything under that is extremely broad. But with this particular thing, I mean, they're saying like, I mean, there's really no, it's just such a sweeping, search, like anything overseas. That seems extremely almost broader than their own definitions of what can be done under national security. So I think they're going to come under a lot of fire for it and probably have to do something just because it's funny. And I saw this on Twitter, which I enjoy very much. Someone said, why are we so upset? We put all of our information out nowadays. It's just all in the public. But people don't like the idea of anybody's phone conversations being monitored, even if it's not their actual conversations. So I think with pressure, they'll do something, but under the laws with national security, they can get away with pretty much anything. This is what I've learned.
Right. And so are you personally, do you agree or disagree with the notion of the government doing what it's doing? I mean, are you a libertarian, sort of an ACLU camp, or are you sort of like, hey, security is the most important thing?
I'm a little bit in between. I don't have like a very strong position on either end. On certain things, I think I'm definitely more conservative, and on other things regarding this stuff, I'm more liberal. This in particular thing just seems so broad and just not very effective because of how broad it is. So I'm more concerned with how sweeping it is, but I mean, if it is true that they're only looking at where calls are being made, I just don't buy that. So if they are looking at actual conversations, I think that that's extreme unless they have reason to pick certain people. But to access everyone's, I don't agree with that. No.
Okay. All right. Well, me personally, not that anyone cared. I think I have the same view of it as Julie. I understand this, the security concerns, but I also don't like the idea of President and Mrs. Obama making fun of me because my phone calls are probably really silly if you listen to them objectively from the outside. So I don't like that. But let's move on to the next news story, because this one, Julie, you found in your diligent research, and I think this one is just fantastic. So let me tee this one up. As everyone knows, there's a guy named Justin Bieber. Maybe you've heard of him.
Call him Biebs.
Biebs. Okay, so if you happen to be a guest at one of Biebs' parties, he might. Well, let me back up. He has supposedly drafted up a contract for anyone who comes to his mansion to sign, and it says that anybody coming in knows that they're responsible for partaking in potentially hazardous activities, and that if you take any photo or video, and then blog or tweet or Instagram this stuff out, you could be slapped with a $5 million lawsuit. And what I want to know is, Julie, how is it possible that you got away with tweeting and blogging stuff from his house without getting sued?
Well, Biebs and I are close, as you
may have heard. Oh, okay. I mean, that I think is the fascinating part, because you sit around all those photos of you and Biebs at the pool, drinking, the photos with you putting your hands behind his head like devil horns.
And playing video games.
He
loves running with friends. That's one of his favorites.
So how did you manage to do that without having to sign this agreement? Or did you sign the agreement and then violate it anyway?
I signed it under a different name. I think I put like Daffy Duck or something. He didn't even notice.
You signed it as Selena Gomez?
Yeah. I signed it as Anne Frank. He was like, oh, she's great. I think she would believe her.
Nice.
I think that's actually standard practice. A lot of, you know, famous people have these contracts drafted for when they have gatherings and things. I'm kind of interested in having one for like when people hang out with me or come over. Cause think of like, if people come over, I feel like I have to clean up, I have to do this and that. But if I had a contract, then I could just be like, don't talk about it or I'll sue you. And then, right?
I like that, right. It would really relieve a lot of the obligation of doing housework, because you could say, like, look, yes, I live in a pigsty, but no one will ever know.
I feel like I shouldn't have to clean up and do things, dress up, put things away, sweep up, just because I'm having guests over. So if I had a contract that just kept it to us, then I wouldn't have to do those things. I think that it's not a bad idea.
I think it's a great idea, in fact. But let's go back to Biebs, if you don't mind.
Oh, Biebs. Oh, fine, Biebs.
I mean, do you really think that people are going to comply with this wish? Or do you think there's going to be a drop-off in attendance at his parties?
I think because the Biebs is just so cool, so very cool, that I'm pretty sure he's going to get people to sign it.
Let me ask you this. If you were invited to a party at Biebs, for real, like, no, all kidding aside, well, again, let's say, would you sign this thing knowing that you would be unable to stop yourself from tweeting and blogging about it and would therefore be sued?
I would love to hang out with Biebs. I mean, if I really want to hang out with the Biebs, just know what a night with Biebs is like, I might just do it.
Yeah.
But if I'm there to spread the word, then it's different.
I gotcha. Well, let me say this. As a semi-celebrity, as one of the original co-founding members of Comedians Law, for which I'm now noted and famous, I'm considering having this agreement. I would make it a little bit different. For Comedians of Law fans who are not familiar, that was the voice of Julie's daughter, who's applied for membership in Comedians of Law.
That's hilarious.
She's sort of like the turkey to our European Union. We're sympathetic to the application, but we're not sure she's just ready just yet. She's shown some radical tendencies that we're not sure we can allow in this union. But to get back to me, for example, people know that I'm relatively famous, certainly in my family. Within my family circles, I'm a pretty famous person. Mm-hmm. Outside of my family, nobody knows me. But within my family, I'm pretty famous. And I'm thinking about having an agreement that says, if you come to my house and then you tweet a picture, I'm going to sue you for like $1.50. Well, no, you know what? Let's make it 2.50, because 2.50 is a subway pass.
Then I would be like, should I do it?
Right. Right. It's like, because then it's more interesting, because then you're really testing people's, you know, friendship. It's like, are you going to honor the agreement just because of your honor? Or are you going to just decide you're going to pay me the subway passes?
It's, I mean, it's a subway pass.
Right. Maybe a monthly pass.
I would definitely think twice about doing it if I visited you, for sure.
I think, yeah, I know you would. I know you would, because because if I invited you over enough, you'd be like, wait a second, I just bought you a monthly.
Yeah. If it were a monthly, I would never say a word.
Does your daughter want to say hello to the fans of Comedians at Law? What's her name?
Ray, say hi.
Hi.
There you go. Everybody, this is Comedians in Law Broadcasting History. One of our younger members, not the youngest. How old is she?
She's almost three.
Okay, so my son, Ivan, is 22 months, so he's a little bit younger. He also is a provisional member of the group. So, you know, they can maybe have a Comedians in Law Junior, like a Nick Junior version of Comedians in Law podcast.
It would actually be really interesting.
It would be limited because Ivan's limited vocabulary is limited to more and no and doggy. I mean, it's very limited, so I'm not sure he would really be a great co-host.
But about the babble, though? He's got to be babbling.
Yeah, he does. He does have a lot of toddlerese going on. In any event, we're digressing from the task. So the bottom line is we should tweet at – I think people who are listening should tweet at us, and we will retweet to Justin Bieber that we think this agreement is too onerous. And he should just trust his friends and family, people visiting him. All right, let's move on to our third story. This one is a little bit serious, but has, you know, perhaps comedic possibilities. A federal court has just ruled that girls of any age can buy generic versions of emergency contraception, known as the morning after pill, without prescriptions, even though the federal government is appealing the ruling. So this will theoretically make morning after pills more accessible to women and girls, in fact. Julie, you're a girl, at least last time I checked, or woman. What's your feeling on this?
Oh,
well said. I think that's really well put.
Well, since I have a daughter, I do think about it. And, I think about when I was younger and all that stuff. So I am for having, you know, available contraception. I think it's smart in the grander picture of it.
All right, but what should there be an age limit? I mean, like, this is like any girl. So like should it be available like in dispensers at the grade school? Like a second grade girl was like, hey, I want some M&Ms and some morning after.
Some morning after.
She gets like a Pez dispenser with some morning after pills in it.
Yeah, okay, so here's my concern. The concern is this. The reason why I would like for there to be some kind of age minimum, but understand why, again, in the grander scheme, it's better that it's sort of open. The decision involved and the effects of it are sort of I mean, it's a big decision, even though, you know, it's a mature decision. And even though it's the morning after pill and it's not as if you're, you know, having an abortion or anything like that, it's still heavy on the mind for a young girl who wouldn't understand what she's doing necessarily. So I don't think it's a light decision to make. And there are some physical effects, not harmful, rarely harmful, but still to be alone and doing that, I think would be difficult. So I would like for there to be a requirement that parents are involved. However, there aren't a lot of supportive parents. Not all parents, I should say, are supportive. So in that vein, I think it should be open, the age.
Right. So you're like an economist. You're like on the one hand or on the other hand. And basically where you come out is you don't take a position because you don't want to make the tough decision here.
Well, no. I would rather that girls are not having babies at young ages than putting this sort of age minimum on there.
Right.
And then, you know, so that parents have their parental rights, you know, all of a sudden we're arguing for parental rights. Well, I think the parental rights really start with, you know, do we have open discourse with our children? Not to the point where you're talking sexual details, but you know, the knowledge of, okay, my kid is active or not active, and do they understand what they're supposed to be doing? That's where I think, you know, parents really need to intervene. So the hope is that we get to that, and it isn't a situation where everyone's just like, oh, let's just do it. I'll take the morning after pill. No big deal, guys. You know, that's not the goal here, obviously. But economically, it's better that girls are not having babies, and they may certainly I would think a young girl who's sexually active at 14, 15 is not talking to their parents and is not going to tell their parents, oops, I screwed up. and then is not going to be able to prevent an unwanted pregnancy.
All right. I think we should take a comedian's law position on this. My personal view is they should limit the lower limit age wise should be a girl can get morning after as long as she's as old as the youngest child bride on Game of Thrones. Okay.
That is good.
Because in this fantasy sci-fi world, there were child brides. So anyone of Game of Thrones age, child bride-wise, or older can get morning after. Below that age, though. Now, I don't know what that is in the real world. And you have to account for the differences. Like, people used to mature earlier because they didn't go to graduate school. I'm not sure how that works. But yeah. here's the bigger question. I think we're overlooking a bigger issue, which is, the morning after pill is fine, but there should be a morning after pill for other bad decisions. Like,
I was actually thinking the same thing.
Like, for example, like, both of us went to law school. That was a terrible decision. Like, I should have had a morning after pill for, like, day two of law school. You know, where I could have just, like, erased it, like a genie. Erased.
So you're saying there should be a morning after pill just for, like, a huge chunk of your life, even.
Right, just like, you know how everybody wakes up, like, the day after partying too hard, and they're like, oh my god, I'm never drinking again? Well, this should be a morning after pill that just, like, removes the hangover and, you know, erases any memories of the night before when you were hanging a sombrero on your head and eating tequila worms.
Okay.
Right? Or, for example, like, going to law school, there should be a morning after pill that erases your law school career.
Mm-hmm.
I was fired summarily several times. I'd like to have a morning after for that one.
That's a good one.
There was the time I had the chance to buy property for very cheap and I didn't do it.
Oh.
I'd like a morning after on that.
That it was like a bad, it would have been a money pit.
Well, let's hope. But
see, I would like the morning after pill that like distorts, changes my memory, not wipes it out, but like maybe I did have a night out with a guy and the next morning I wake up and I remember as being someone a lot better, or maybe I went out and I was the coolest person there instead of the one that, you know, got rejected over and again by everybody.
That's such the female version of the morning after, like the Judy Blume version of the morning after pill. Like, it's so typical. Like, a woman wants to, like, you know, nuance the edges of it. And the guy's like, I just want to cut it off.
Yeah. I was like to think that he said nice things. Like, well, you're very lovely. Instead of, please give me more space or go away now.
All right. Well, okay. So the bottom line is, obviously, until one of us does something like get a science degree and invent morning after pills, that's never going to happen. But the bottom line, you think, your view is morning after pill is good and it should be accessible to young women, even as young as the age of 8, theoretically, if they could be a child bride in some fantasy world. Mm-hmm. I happen to think the morning after pill is available without a prescription to any girl is a great thing, too, although I don't think it should be available in Pez dispensers. Pez dispensers or in gumball machines. I think you should have to actually go through the humiliation of going to a drugstore and putting it on the counter. That is, you know, it's like with guys buying condoms. Like, there is an embarrassment factor buying condoms. And I think girls should have the same embarrassment factor. You have to confess to your pharmacist that you're having sex.
Well, that's actually a good idea.
Like, that's basically what you're doing. You're confessing to this person you don't know that you just engaged in some embarrassing sexual activity. Or you're about to, if it's a guy buying condoms. Because there's no good way to buy condoms. You either buy a – I mean, not that I – listen, I'm married. We don't have sex anymore. But when I used to buy condoms, whether you buy a 3-pack, which is the standard pack, or a giant box of like 72 because you're in a relationship – either way, it's incredibly embarrassing when you put them down on the counter. And all I'm suggesting is when you're buying morning after, there should be a very high embarrassment factor.
I would actually be really excited to buy a huge pack of condoms. Be like, look what I'm doing with my time.
Right, water balloons.
Like when I was reading, I was like, well, why do these girls get to have all this fancy sex and then I don't? So I would love to buy like a family pack of the morning after pill.
Why do they get it? Usually fancy sex?
Yeah.
How do you know it's so fancy? What, do they put a bow on their behind while they're doing
it? They might. That's fancy. Or they wear dresses or something. That's exciting.
Okay. All right. Well,
why not?
I don't know that we... Okay, I like it. Let's leave it at that. The girls who are having fancy sex... If you're capable of having fancy sex, you should have access to the morning after pill. All right. Well, let's enter the news because we've got to head out to our interview. This is a very exciting interview because this is somebody you know.
Yes.
Personally.
Yep.
So without further ado, let's cut to the interview portion of our show, which we've cleverly designated interview. So we're very pleased to have on our show tonight for our interview James Inigus, who is a solo practitioner in New York. He is known very well by Julie,
mm-hmm.
Who is
mm-hmm.
And they say that knowingly because I guess Julie, you set it up. What is your relationship with? Well, first of all, let me welcome James to the podcast. James, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hey, we're really happy to have you here, and. We're particularly pleased because Julie was singing your praises. So, Julie, let's hear why you were singing James' praises so well and so much.
Okay. So, James actually gave me my first real legal job.
Big mistake, James, obviously.
Well, you know, I hired her sight unseen.
No, tell the people why you hired me. Tell the people.
Well, I almost dropped out of law school to go be a comedian.
Is that right?
Yeah, if I hadn't gotten an A in property, I probably would have dropped out.
So the rule against perpetuity saved the world from one more comedian?
That's right. So I got a... So I saw this
Come on.
Friend of a friend on Facebook, and she had a kind of nice butt, so I friended her.
And that wasn't me. I'm not.
No, it wasn't you. And she said that she had a friend who went to my law school who was looking for a job. And the interesting thing about her is that she won the funniest lawyer in New York contest.
Oh, wait a second. Wait
always
a second.
Comes back.
This is a sore spot on this program and in our group because the year that Julie won the funniest lawyer in New York, she beat me. And to this day, I contest those results.
Well, not only did she beat you, but she got a job, too.
Oh, my God.
And I choose not to compete again. I choose not to compete again.
Yeah, because you know I'd mop the floor with you. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's like that Seinfeld where you won't race again.
Exactly.
So, all right, so you hired Julie, sight unseen, clearly a mistake. But now... Let's let the fans. So you're a solo practitioner, which is ironic since you hired a second person to work with you. So you're no longer solo.
Well, you know her. I was still all alone.
And but the bedrock of your practice is, as I understand, matrimonial or family law.
Yes, that is correct.
All right. Notwithstanding the A you got in property.
Well, yeah, I know, right? I probably should have followed that, but
right.
Closings are really, 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 really boring and stressful.
I got you. So what was it that led you into matrimonial law?
Karma.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Expand.
My mom's a pretty well-known psychoanalyst, and, you know, divorce runs in my family, and it was a natural fit.
Uh-huh. Now, do you find that you're getting yourself emotionally involved in your clients' cases?
I wouldn't say emotionally involved, but I do enjoy the justice aspect of it, you know, because unless they're both crazy, usually one person is right, one person is wrong.
All right. Bigger question. Was Julie any good at matrimonial law?
I don't know because, see, Julie doesn't speak Spanish, and most of my clients speak Spanish.
So, I learned a lot while I was there.
I think, you know, her most common advice to a client was, yo no sé.
Which translated into English means...
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I would say, yo no sé dónde está James.
Yeah.
So if I understand it correctly, your job was to answer the phone in a stereotypically broken Spanglish voice.
Yeah, pretty much.
She was. People thought that she was mocking them. So that was.
That was an issue. That was an issue.
That was an issue. Why'd you make fun of my accent? Huh? Why'd you make fun of the way I speak English? And then people would get upset. I'm Cuban, by the way, so I can do that.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I can do that. You can't, but... So.
Right. And obviously Julie couldn't, and therefore her tenure at your firm was short-lived.
Oh, no. She just moved on to bigger and better things. See? You know, you just can't keep the funniest lawyer of 2010 down.
Right. She moved
really
on.
Can't.
So now, for the fans who don't know this, Julie's working in a firm where they only speak French.
And she's still looking for that Greek law firm to make her...
So I can work at
home.
Right.
So I can do maritime law, which is
that's
in
right.
demand.
Right, and the export and import of pistachio nuts.
Yeah, and goats.
And goats. So James, because we have a range of different lawyers and law students listening to the podcast, and particularly for the law students and younger lawyers, why don't you give them like a minute or two sort of thumbnail of what you like and what you don't like about being a solo practitioner?
Oh, I don't like the cash flow. That's you know, it's like, you know, 6 months of the year, you feel like, you know, you're living on the Riviera, you know, and then Christmas rolls around and you're like breaking into your kid's bank to make ends meet. It's just cash flow can be just brutal, especially in the city.
Yeah.
And that is about it, really. I mean, you know, you're always working, but you're a lawyer, so you should expect that. And you're never really on vacation, but you know what? You're a lawyer, so you should expect that. I mean, it really just comes down to, the trade-off is self-determination versus cash flow versus, you know, a steady paycheck.
Interesting. So on balance, though, do you like practicing the way you do?
Yes.
You do?
I wouldn't do it any other way. I wouldn't do this job any other way. I mean, I've been lucky. I've always surrounded myself with a lot of really genuine people.
Well, with the exception of Julie, of course.
No, Julie's genuine. Just not genuinely a good lawyer.
Right.
I'm kidding.
Right, she's
I'm good at filing things.
You are very good at organizing.
Right.
We
so for the law students listening,
one of your old bins, and I found these really wonderfully organized discovery responses that should have been in a file.
Right.
And
so
not.
So for the law students listening or thinking about getting a job, you know, being able to file properly is critical if you want to work for someone who needs help.
That's right. You must be both a brilliant star and adept at the mundane.
Right, and good with alphabetizing.
Oh, well, yeah, because, you know, we use words.
Right. So now, James, you mentioned your interest in comedy. Have you pursued at all comedy as a hobby even? Or
I did a lot of improv, like classes and stuff, you know. It's really, yeah, it was a hobby, I would say. I did go to see Julie a couple of times, and they wanted to hire me as a professional laugher. apparently I have a really good laugh.
He does have a good laugh. Laugh leader. You're a laugh leader, James.
A laugh leader.
Well, we need you at our upcoming show on June 21st at Gotham Comedy.
I only charge $3.75 an hour, so that's perfect.
Terrific. That's more than we charge. All right. Well, look, we have to wrap up the interview, but James, we want to give you a chance to plug or promote anything you're doing or whether your firm website or a book you're working on. So here's a minute to promote away.
Well, you know, I just got appointed to represent children for adults that are embroiled in family law. And so I'm looking to see the softer, kinder side of this, you know, try to help kids manage their way through, I guess.
That's great.
So anybody out there looking to get divorced, Just remember, I make people happy. You're not happy right now, but I'll make you happy.
Right. So how, yeah. if people want to reach out to you, how can they contact you?
Oh, my website's jeilaw.com.
Jeilaw.com. And you want to give an email or the website's enough?
No, the website's enough.
Okay.
Thank you. Right. Otherwise, you know, I'll start getting all those harassing, can I have a job? Can I have a job?
Right. From Julie, no less.
Yeah.
She'll come back.
Right, we'll right, right.
She'll come back.
Maybe I'll hire you as my comedy intern one day, James.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, with that, we're gonna close down the interview. James Iniguez, thanks so much for joining us. And we're going to head off into other portions of this podcast. Okay, that was a great interview with James. It's interesting you guys work together. We'll talk more about it. But now we have to cut to the last portion of our show, Julie, which is, I know you've been looking forward to this. You've been sharpening your knives all day. Mm-hmm. This is the good cop, bad cop portion of the show.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'm really sorry about that. I just, I saw how aggressive you were being, and I thought, wow, I gotta go even bigger than that since we're doing bad cop, bad cop.
What? No, I said good cop, bad cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
Okay, and Julie, you're gonna be this week the bad cop, I understand it. Mm-hmm. And just so our fans understand, every week we like to reward our fans and followers for following us, tweeting to us, and engaging with us. And, you know, we've had some ups and downs. But this week, Julie, I'm proud to announce that we've got ten more followers.
Hmm.
Now, nobody has tweeted at us, but we've got 9 or 10 more followers. I think that's good.
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point if they're not tweeting us? They're probably reading, what, Kim Kardashian's news feed?
Well, no. If they're following us, they're getting our tweets. Okay? So
I want them to retweet the tweets.
Well,
what's
all right.
The point of just following? There's no point in just following. They should be retweeting. They should be favoriting. They should be commenting.
But that means the burden's on us, I think, to raise our game.
Okay. Us?
Yeah.
If we're tweeting, we're meeting our burden. What are they doing? As our followers, isn't it really who's supposed to be doing the work here? The people following should be making an active effort to show us that they follow us because they care. Not just because they clicked on the word follow. I just think what's it matter? Why should we follow them? It's not like it's important. Is that really what it is? I'm just going to follow them? That's the thought in their head?
Wow, that was coming from like a deep psychological place. I think you're putting too much pressure on our fans. I mean, they're taking the time out of their day to follow us.
The time it takes a second. Come on.
And I think you know, we're the content providers, we're the comedians, the burden is upon us to generate. If they're not retweeting or favoriting, well, then we've got to come up with better stuff. That's what I think.
I think that's sweet, but I think that's like saying, I have friends. They never call me. They call themselves my friends. But they never call. They never call me back. They never say hi. They walk by me in the hallway. Oh, whatever. We're your friend. We call you that. That's good enough, is it? Oh, look at this.
All right. Well, let's do this then. Let's. I will give you this much. Since nobody tweeted at us at all, or even messaged us. We won't give away a free T-shirt this week, which we usually do to the best tweet of the week. Following us is good, but we didn't get anybody actually tweeting at us. So I will go. I will meet you halfway in your negativity by saying we're not going to send a free T-shirt to anybody. But let's come up now with a really good tweet challenge for people for next week.
Ooh. All right?
So this is what we typically do. We tell people they should tweet at us with using the hashtag CalPod, hashtag symbol CALPOD, in response to what we're about to say, and the best one will get a free T-shirt. So now we have to have something that's a good Twitter challenge. And I think the two that leap to my mind would be whether, A, they would have a similar contract to enter their house as Justin Bieber has for his house, or what's the minimum age that the morning after pill should be available to women. So I'm going to leave it up to you to choose between those two, and then we'll make that the challenge for next week.
I think the Biebs won.
Okay, so the challenge to our fans and followers is the following. Give us your best tweet as to whether or not you would have a contract people need to sign before they enter your house that they will be liable for $5 million if they tweet out or blog pictures of your house. And why would you do that? And remember, it's hashtag CalPod, C-A-L-P-O-D. And the best one we will read on air, and we'll give you a free T-shirt, send you a free T-shirt.
Who wouldn't do that?
I don't know. But that's the challenge. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we've come to the end of the podcast. Julie, it was great. You were, I think, loquacious. You were articulate at times. You got our provisional member on air, which was a fantastic moment in broadcasting history. And it was great having you here. So for Comedians in Law, there's Alex Barnett and
Julie Katakis.
And we will talk to you guys next week.